Morning, everybody. I'm going to talk about results of a collaboration between Germany and Mexico. Mexico, Daniel Pasch, who is sophisticated cooling code is the basic of our numerical results, and Thomas Zanias from the University of Morelia. The question whether the magnetic field in isolated neutron stars decays, and if so, how, is a basic question, obviously also of some interest for the members of our program. The exact measurements of P and P dot of about 1,000 pulsars and the study of their inferred surface magnetic fields and the active age suggests that there is some magnetic field decay in neutron stars life. The evidence for this field decay is rather good pronounced for the older population, while it is less evident for the younger population of pulsars. How the magnetic field of neutron star decays depends crucially on where this magnetic field is anchored, how strong it is initially, what is its structure. It depends on the equation of state of the neutron star, which determines the length scale of the field, on the conductive properties of neutron star matter, and on the cooling history, which in turn depends on the equation of state. This first question, where the magnetic field is anchored, is strongly related to the generation process of the neutron star magnetic field. If one follows the simple idea that the flux is conserved during the collapse, or if such a scenario as Duncan and Thompson proposed in 1993, that the effective dynamo in the proto-neutron star produces the magnetic field, then this field will certainly penetrate both the core and the crust of the neutron star, and it further decay depends on the state of the matter in the core. If the state of the matter is normal, so it consists only of neutrons, protons, and electrons, there's only a chance to decay the magnetic field on a time scale smaller than the Hubble time if the magnetization parameter is large enough, larger than one, so that the whole component of the electric conductivity can organize more rapid magnetic field decay. If the core matter underwent a phase transition into the superfluid phase, then for the magnetic field strength under consideration, the flux is certainly organized in quantized flux tubes, and the decay of the field depends on how these flux tubes can be expelled from the core and subsequently ohmically dissipated in the crust. The other basic scenario is that in the core there is practically no or only a weak magnetic field, and shortly after neutron star's birth, by a thermoelectric instability, and relatively strong magnetic field can be created by the transfer of thermal energy into magnetic energy in the crust. This was first proposed for astrophysical settings by Dolginov and Urpin in 1918, and then this idea came up for neutron stars by Blandford, Applegate, and Hirnquist. Further on, it was elaborated by Urpin, Levshakov, and Yakovlev, and also we in Berlin and Potsdam contributed a little bit. In that case, we have a crustal field, and we want to follow the idea that the field is concentrated only in the crust and see what consequences this has. The most recent and detailed analysis of such a crustal field, the consequences for the magnetic and spin evolution, was provided in 1970 by Urpin and Konyenkov, and they concluded by comparison with observations that the initial magnetic field should be in the range between 10 to 12 and 3 times 10 to 13 Gauss, and the initial density up to which the magnetic field is confined should in the range between 10 to 12 and 10 to 13 grams per cubic centimeter. The the agreement was obtained for a standard cooling scenario, and in the equation of state, which describes the state of matter in the core, is a more or less stiff one. However, they didn't take into account general relativistic effects onto the magnetic field evolution and didn't treat self-consistently the field and the thermal evolution of the neutron star.
When you say crustal field, are you going to define what you mean more by that in terms of the current distribution?
That means that initially the currents, if we have a dipolar magnetic field of crustal origin, then it means that the currents are toroidal currents circulating in the crust of the neutron star up to the crust core boundary.
So you have no currents in the core?
We have no currents in the core. Yes, our aim is here to treat simultaneously the solution of the evolution equation for the magnetic field and the temperature to get an idea about the mutual dependencies of the equation of state, which that's also the compactness, the initial magnetic field strength, the initial structure of the field, and the thermal evolution. We want to consider compactness ratios, it means equation of state in a wide range to cover all what is variable, and Yes, as already said, we treat not only the thermal evolution, but also the magnetic evolution, general relativistic, and because it is not at all possible up to now, we apply a semi-general relativistic treatment of the rotational evolution. And finally, we want to compare our model calculations with the observational data.
To a question. You're saying that the currents have to be between 10 to 12 and 10 to 13 grams per cubic centimeter.
Mm-hmm.
So isn't that quite high?
No, it depends on your generation scenario. It's somewhere in the crust. So normally you set the density where the crust meets the core at the nuclear density 2 times 10 to 8, a little bit less, 1.6. We took 1.6 times 10 to 14 grams per cubic centimeter. It depends on your... Of course, it is a parameter you can fit with the further magnetic field evolution. If you put the magnetic currents initially at to low densities, the conductivity is relatively low, and you have initially already a rather fast magnetic field decay. If you put it initially in deeper regions, the field will decay much slower. So that is a parameter which is of importance.
Can you name a fuel generation mechanism that will naturally build up 10 to 12, 10 to 13 Gauss at low densities like that?
Actually not. No. No, what is known about this thermoelectric instability, one can produce magnetic field strengths in the order 10 to 12, 10 to 13 in lower density regions up to now. It's a liquid. This effect is effective, especially in the liquid region. And then you can obtain such magnetic field strengths. And then you have to speculate about the further diffusion of this field into the solid layer. So it is an assumption that the magnetic field is initially located there. It's not completely unbearable, but one has to say it's an assumption, a model assumption. Yes, to attack the problem, we have to start with calculating the stellar structure for the different equation of state we choose. So we start with the simplest possible assumption, a spherical symmetric non-rotating neutron star, apply the usual Schwarzschild coordinates, which the space-time geometry is, the interior and exterior space-time geometry is described by such a metric. Then the procedure is more or less standard when one selects a certain equation of state and has to solve the Einstein equation together with the Tuman-Oppenheimer-Volkoff equation, where we have an additional constraint that the mass of all our neutron stars is 1.4 solar masses. As an outer boundary, we choose that at the density of 10 to 10 grams per cubic centimeter, the reason is that then the equation of state that is our surface of the star. That then the equation state is more or less temperature independent, but we have to treat the envelope, the region above this boundary separately. I will speak about this later on. The thermal evolution of the neutron stars is described by the energy balance, which relates the internal luminosity to the change of the internal energy and to the sinks and sources of energy. An important sink of energy is a neutron emission, a neutrino emission. The mean free path of the neutrinos is so large that they leave the star as soon as they are produced. And a source of energy is the Joule heating. Here comes the coupling to the magnetic field evolution, which determines the thermal evolution, especially in the late stages of neutron star life. The other equation is an energy transport equation, which relates the heat flux to the internal luminosity. Lambda is the thermal conductivity, which consists of two parts, an electronic and a radiative one. Both processes work in parallel and independently on each other. However, the radiative heat conduction is effective only in the outermost layers. The boundary condition relates the temperature in our outermost layer with a luminosity there, which in turn is related to the effective temperature of the neutron star. Because we set our boundary at 10 to 10 grams per cubic centimeter, we have to adapt the relation between the temperature in our outermost layer to the effective temperature of the neutron star. Pasch and Sarmiento calculated the heat transport through this envelope, this low-density envelope, which is strongly affected by the magnetic field, or can be affected by the magnetic field. So they gave relations between if there is a certain temperature at 10 to 10 grams per cubic centimeter, one obtains the effective temperature of the neutron star depending on the magnetic field level just in that moment. For the magnetic field evolution, we apply the so-called 3 plus 1 of the Maxwell equations, and the magneto-heterodynamic approximation, which is due to the high conductivity, well justified for neutron stars. It looks very similar to what we are known as the induction equation or diffusion equation of the magnetic field in flat space-time. However, this C, the Laplace function or redshift, affects the field evolution at least when some effects, we will see it later, by itself, by the gradient of the Laplace function, and additionally all the differential operators are formed out of the spatial part of the three metric I showed before. The procedure is
simple way to understand that.
Yes, I can show it to you. It is we derived it is just published in FISREFD in June 15th with the same authors, Daniel Page and Thomas Saniers. We derived this general relativistic expression for the magnetic field evolution, and we made it some calculations with a constant density star model to see the basic effect of this GR.
But what should our intuition be for the nature of GR effect? What does GR do?
The main effect of GR is that the magnetic field decay will be slowed down.
Why?
It will be slowed down because of the effect of the redshift, because the proper time in the layers in the neutron star goes slower than the time where the observer is located. That is the main effect. We have also effects by the curvature of the space, but the main effect, we made such a deductive ensemble to show the effect of the spatial curvature and of the time curvature, and we could show that the time curvature, the redshift, gives the main effect onto the slowdown of magnetic. It's a general factor also in the, if you have the diffusion equation for the temperature, for heat conduction, it also is it slows down by the mass, by the compression.
So are you saying that in the frame of the observer which is sitting on the neutron star, there is not much change, but the GR affects the difference between the clocks of the observer and the neutron star and the
field? There is a difference of the clocks. The clocks in the neutron star are much slower. That's the main effect. The clocks in the neutron star are much slower. And even within the neutron star, this redshift factor is R dependent. So you have regions close to the center where it may be even the other way around, that the clocks can be faster. But at the surface of the neutron star, and we observe only surface fields, there the clocks for sure go slower, and that is the main effect which of it. So we have these three ways how general relativity affects field evolution. The formalism is straightforward and similar to that what is done for a dipolar magnetic field in flat space-time. One tries such a separation ansatz with a Stokes stream function. This F is similar to the Stokes stream function in flat space. And with a little algebra, one can write down the diffusion equation in terms of F, and one has the effect of the general relativity here, and the coupling to the thermal evolution by the temperature dependence of the electric conductivity. So once we know by solving the stellar structure equation this the radial dependence of this metric function, mass function, pressure in the crust, and we have a given initial structure of the magnetic field, this equation yields us the evolution of a magnetic field, and we can easily calculate the real magnetic field in the neutron star and outside. The boundary conditions are very similar to that what we know from flat space. Of course, the magnetic field should be regular in the center of the star, and at the surface of the star it should match to the dipolar field, as it is known in the Schwarzschild background, already calculated by Ginzburg and also 1964 and Anderson and Cohn in 1970. One sees this magnetic field outside is very similar to the dipolar magnetic field as we know it. There are only these famous corrections, general relativistic corrections, which consist mainly of logarithmic terms. So that the outer boundary condition would be that of the flat space if G is equal to 1, G becomes larger than 1 in dependence on the compactness of the star, and this means a bending of the field lines close to the surface of the neutron star.
Can flux, if I think about the total magnetic flux in the crust, can flux actually leak out of the boundaries?
Excuse me?
Or is it, can magnetic flux leak out of the top boundary?
Leak up?
Yeah, is there a field of fuses?
No. This you have always in this MHD approximation. You have always a smooth transition of the internal magnetic field to the external magnetic field.
Ulrich, and do you really consider the magnetic field up to the center of the star?
In principle, yes, but not. the equations are organized in that way that we really integrate it down to the center of the star, but we mimic the superconductive surface of the core by an enormous large electric conductivity there, so that we actually have. We put initially the magnetic field structure only in the crust, and then it has no chance to diffuse into the core.
So the actual inner condition is different from the condition which is really.
In our scheme, it's really that, but it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. You could also have the. We did it in the paper with Vadim Urpin earlier, and you could also say magnetic field should be zero at the crust core boundary. It would yield the same results. We checked it. It is actually the same result.
But that sort of makes the length scale for the magnetic field never any longer than the crust, thickness of the crust.
Yes, that's right.
But if the field were able to penetrate into the core by some kind of, you know,
that changed physics completely.
Entering into it, then it would be.
That changed physics completely, and that is what actually was discussed last Monday, what can happen under the effect of accretion, that the magnetic field is attracted or pressed into the core and they are assimilated in the superconductive.
Or by its own forces. could press.
And normally, is a super. We have the Meissner-Oxenfeld effect at the surface of the superfluid core, and there is no chance for the magnetic field to penetrate into it.
Except in the form of these fluxoids, then.
Yes.
So, and since it's a fluid, you could in principle have these fluxoids sort of pressed in.
But we have no other forces under the magnetic field. We have a non-rotating isolated neutron star without accretion. So, how should the magnetic field penetrate into
the... Magnetic fields have forces in them.
Yeah.
So in a fluid, they go...
It's not a fluid, it's a crystal.
No, but in the... I'm talking about the fluid core.
But it is from the very beginning.
Then you can get a very strong field above the lower critical field of the superconductor. You can see superconductor type 2 superconductor.
Yeah, okay.
You need like 10 to the 15 bars to have the field penetrate into the...
Yeah, but isn't that the whole story behind these fluxoids, that the magnetic field does in fact penetrate in the form of these...
No. It's initially already in the core, this magnetic field. And then the transition happens. Then the magnetic field has no other chance than to organize in fluxoids.
If it can be pulled out, like in Rudolf Meissner's pictures, then sure enough, the magnetic field by its own forces can also fluxoids in there. He would generate fluxoids, but the field lines would be the same ones. So they'd just be concentrated into the fluxoids that need to be there in order to be compatible with this sort of conducting nature.
I'm not sure. Under that circumstances, if you have no rotation...
The field must be able to critical field.
No, it's for the advanced superconductor, isn't it? Mm-hmm. It's for the advanced superconductor. It needs to be above the critical, but for type 2 there is no problem.
This is type 2 superconductor.
Yeah. I think one has to decide whether one believes that these fluxoids in the core, if it's a reasonable picture or not. If you say, well, it's for physics, for reasons of physics, I don't believe that these conditions exist, then fine with you. But if you believe that these can exist, then sure enough, a layer of magnetic field sort of wrapped around the core will penetrate into it and form these fluxoids.
But the magnetic field just at the crossed core boundary goes to zero. We will see it.
Well, that's because of the boundary condition there, isn't it?
It's in our boundary, it's because there is an infinite electric conductivity. It diffuses through the crust step by step, but there's no chance to enter the core. The story is another if you have initially the magnetic field in the core and then the superfluid phase transition happens. Then the existing magnetic field can be only organized in the... Yes, the Joule heating is also, I guess everybody believes it to me, it can be simply expressed because we have a simple geometry of this only toroidal electric current density can be simply expressed in terms of this general relativistic Stokes function.
How is Joule heating compared to
the
luminosity?
We will see it later.
Very significant.
I'll show it to you. So what is the input on microphysical assumptions? Of course, we have to first choose an equation of state, which should give us not only the pressure and density profile, but also the chemical composition. We take the boundary between crust and core at 1.6 times 10 to 14 grams per cubic centimeter, as Lorenz, Wartenhall, and Pettig did it in 1903. For the chemical composition at densities above the neutron trip, we take those of Nagele and Fartorin of 1903, and for the autocross set of Hensel, Stulin, and Dobrashevsky, 1989. So we have a chemical composition in the crust which consists of cold catalyzed matter, and we have no light elements at the surface, which certainly would change the thermal behavior of the crust. Important for all these cooling processes are neutrino emission processes, both in the crust and in the core. In the crust, we consider plasmon processes and electron ion Bremsstrahlung processes. However, they are by far not so important for the thermal evolution as the neutrino emission processes in the core. Here we consider two different scenarios, the so-called standard cooling scenario, which in our case is based on modified Urkar processes and the associated Bremsstrahlung processes as described in paper by Yakovlev and Levenfish in 1995 with a neutrino emission efficiency in this order of magnitude. The other scenario we consider is a fast cooling, so we have a strong neutrino emission, very strong neutrino emission which cools the core fastly down. Here we see the difference in the direct Urkar, from the direct Urkar neutrino emissivity to modified Urkar, and it's in five orders of magnitude. This fast cooling scenario is much more physical for soft equation of a neutron stars with soft equation of state. In our model calculations, you see here which part of the inner core is allowed for fast neutrino emission. You see the soft equation of state is favored. And an ingredient which counteracts the cooling by neutrino emission is a pairing, the transition to either superfluid or superconductive state. In a series of papers by Levenfish and Yakovlev in 1994-95, this suppression of the neutrino emission and simultaneously the reduction of the specific heat was described, and we apply this mechanism. If this superfluid transition appears, if the transition temperature is high enough in the core, this fast cooling scenario and also the standard cooling scenario the effect of this fast cooling will be strongly reduced. Another emission process we took also into account, and it's a sink of energy, is the Cooper pair breaking information process. It is during the formation or breaking of Cooper pairs, neutrinos will be emitted. It's also a sink of energy. However, this process plays only it can be very strong, but plays only a role if the temperature is around the transition temperature. This pairing is really a very important process. I guess Danny can tell much, much more about this. It determines strongly the cooling story until the moment when Joule heating takes the control over the cooling. Because it can, due to the suppression of the neutrino emission, it can make a fast cooling scenario much more similar to a standard cooling scenario, and maybe at the end you cannot make a difference between both. Another effect of the pairing in our crustal field scenario is that a superconducting core will not allow, according to Meissen and Ochsenfeld, the crust field to penetrate into the core. For the conductivities in the core, in the crust, we make the usual, well-known formula in the liquid calculated by Ito for conductivity made by electron-ion collisions, and in the crust we have both scattering of the electrons at phonons. This is the solid lines, which is strongly temperature dependent, density and temperature dependent. You see how it increases with the cooling of the neutron star, and we have the scattering of electrons and at impurity centers, at impurities in the core, and it's clear that depends on the concentration of the impurities. In this figure, you see a typical behavior, both of the cooling as a function of time. You have these both cooling scenarios, initially neutrino dominated, and then this increase in the slope, photon dominated. The cooling is determined by the irradiation of photons from the surface of the neutron star. The magnetic field decay has qualitatively four different phases. The first, phase A, is that the initial field decay, this neutron star is still hot, and the conductivity is mainly determined by electron-phonon collisions. Then in the course of the cooling of the neutron star, the conductivity increases. It leads to a saturation of the field decay, and such a plateau is formed where the field no longer decays. And a further decay can happen only if the time becomes larger than the impurity decay time. So you have a next power law decay, and which is followed by an exponential decay once the magnetic field has been diffused down to the crossed core boundary and cannot diffuse more inwardly. Now, let us come to the results. For here, the Stoke function, this general relativistic Stoke function F, the corresponding magnetic field strength, the electric current density, and the Joule heating rate as functions of the density, 10 to 10 to 1.6 times 10 to, or 2 times 10 to 14 grams per cubic centimeter in that different phases A, B, C, D shown. You see clearly both in the, for the Stokes function and for the magnetic field, the diffusion process down to the crossed core boundary. It's seen how the electric current in the process becomes, the electric current density becomes negative just in that region where the magnetic field is growing due to diffusion. And at the end, if the magnetic field is diffused down to the core boundary, we have a negative current density only at the surface of the superconducting core. Now, your question, how strong is the effect of Joule heating? This corresponds initially to about a luminosity of about 10 to 30, 10 to 31. It sounds rather good, but just in this early moment, it is, you can forget about it in comparison with the luminosity the neutron star has only by its thermal resources. However, at the end, also it becomes small. You will see it becomes an important
Ulrich, source. Sorry, and what is the nature of these dips in Q dot?
That is when we have
the law dips in the dependence of Q dot overall.
When this is just when we have it's changed the sign, and then the electric current changed its sign, so this changed also its sign.
Now let us finally come to the results. Here we considered not only three different equation of state and two different cooling scenarios, but we considered also different initial configurations. So the full line corresponds to an initial density of 10 to 13 gram per cubic centimeter, and an impurity content of 10 to minus 3. The dashed line corresponds to 10 to 12, and Q 10 to minus 2. And the dotted line and the dashed line is with 10 to 11, and Q 10 to minus 1. That should mimic somehow an initial condition where the magnetic field promises to decay slowly. It is initially located in relatively deep regions of the crust where the conductivity is high and the impurity content is low, so you have all a relatively high conductivity. That mimics a more or less average situation where a magnetic field which is at the beginning in such a condition should decay relatively fast.
What does 3 mean? 3, the tail?
Yes, it corresponds to these three different initial.
No, what I mean, this tail. What is the cause of the tail?
Oh, the late time.
Map
3.
Oh, that corresponds to this. This is the same model. That is it's our sign of the model. Model number 3 are those with a which are
that
corresponds
one.
To this.
The top one.
Yes, and you see there is no 2, that means there is no initial configuration.
So is that some kind of heating, magnetic heating or something?
Yes, this is magnetic, this is the effect of Joule heating.
Magnetic field,
yes.
Magnetic heating or something.
Of the dissipation of the magnetic field energy.
Yes, on the effective surface temperature, is it taken at the equator or at the pole?
It is an average. It's an average. It's an effective surface.
Over.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes, you see the characteristic for the standard cooling model. You have this, again, this period of a neutron and neutrino dominated cooling, then the photon dominated cooling, and the moment when this gel heating becomes important is practically determined only by the selection of the transition temperature into the superfluid state by its density dependence and by its value itself. We made to show the effect of general relativity, the thick lines corresponds to calculations with including the general relativistic effect, and this here we switched off the general relativistic effects in the field diffusion equation, and you see really tremendous differences, especially in the long run. Of course, we have what one is expected: the magnetic field decay in a neutron star with soft equation of state should be much faster than in a stiff equation of state, simply because of the effect of the length scales. So, yes, well, this effect is maintained, but it is the difference is drastically reduced. After 10 to 10 years, we have, if we would not take into account the general relativistic effect, we have 4 orders of magnitude difference in the final field strength between a stiff and a soft equation of state, and this difference reduces to about 1 order of magnitude. So the original hope was, when we consider only a magnetic field decay, we can conclude about the state of matter in the neutron star. Here it is, it's impressive, yes, if we have, at the end, such a low magnetic field, it must be a soft equation of state, but now it becomes much more complicated. For the fast cooling scenario, the situation is qualitatively different, both with respect to the field decay and to the thermal evolution. Due to the very intense cooling of the core, the heat flux, the heat comes from the hotter crust into the core, and this during this isothermalization period, which may last 1 to 100 years, independent on the equation of state, and the consequence for the field decay is that we have practically no period.
You have no superfluid here. In this cooling, you have no effect of superfluid, right? No Cooper
pairs. On the
auto core.
No Cooper
pair.
Maybe included.
Effect of
it was different for the. Yes, we did.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah. Yes, the effect of this rapid cooling is that practically there is no period where the electron-phonon collisions determine the conductivity. We have very soon a transition to the impurity-dominated cooling, and therefore always such a plateau in the magnetic field decay. It's a general feature of fast cooling scenarios that the magnetic field decays much slower in comparison to standard cooling scenarios. Also, the gel heating becomes important earlier, considerably earlier, and in a period of, say, 10 to 7 to 10 to 8 years, the surface temperature of neutron stars with fast cooling is even hotter than those with standard cooling. But at the end, after 10 to 10 years, you will see no difference. Now we come to the point where we can make comparison with observation.
Can I ask a little bit about the impurities, because I don't know if you're going to say more about them. I mean, so de Blasio has these recent papers on worrying about impurities at the boundaries between two different regions in the crust, and I've forgotten, when you integrate, what the effect of Q is of that. Does anyone, I mean, it seems to me that de Blasio's work makes it clear there is a minimum level of impurities that just the thermodynamics tells you must be there. I don't remember what that number is. Does anyone?
No.
Dimitri's nodding his head. Do you remember what the number is?
No, I remember the paper, but I don't remember.
So, I mean, that paper just says that the transition is not sharp, and there's always thin regions.
Yeah. According to the Blasio, the number of impurities depends on density. Mm-hmm. And the impurities are concentrated in those very thin layers where the change of the nuclear composition occurs.
Right.
So, several meters, the depth of this layer is about several meters. So the concentration is very non-uniform.
So these numbers you're taking are just...
It's a parameter, what is known from the literature. It's a parameter you can guess some reasonable assumptions, but it's really hard to define, really well justified, this parameter. Yes, let's compare our results with the observations. For the observation, we take P and P dot from the Princeton catalog and calculate according to this formula which relates loss of rotational energy to the magneto-dipole radiation losses. The magnetic field, the surface magnetic field, taken into account, of course, the different equation of state which changes R and the moment of inertia. This effect alone, you see, gives about one order of magnitude difference in the magnetic field strength for the different equation of state. One would say our scenario, this crustal field hypothesis, is okay and explains more or less the observation. Once this tracks meet the heart, the center of this crowd of points for observations, and not necessary to perform a special and extreme fine tuning to reach this point. So everybody can do it by itself. It's seen, for example, this soft equation of state in the standard cooling scenario is ruled out. About initial magnetic field strengths of 10 to 14, we should not speak in this context, but even 10 to 13 will barely hit the center of this. And the other configurations with the other initial configurations will even not meet this crowd of points. It becomes a little bit better for the medium equation of state, but in that case I would speak about fine tuning, because you have to demand that the initial magnetic field is strong and the impurity content is extremely low, and it should be located very deep in the crust.
Can you please clarify why is it ruled out, this soft equation of state and so on?
If you consider this also evolutionary tracks. Here you start with a magnetic field of 10 to 13 Gauss, and this is comfortable conditions that it can survive for a while. And you see it meets only in this low region. The other initial configuration even will not come into the center of this crowd. So it is an indicator that it is not so.
You can always say that initial magnetic fields are quite different in different neutron stars.
Yes.
I understand that, of course.
Yeah.
It would be impossible to compare, but isn't it, realistic?
That is not a yes or no. It is a hint that it is in this way.
Why is the data shifting downward from left to right?
It is because we have different, from the equation of state, different moments of inertia and radii. When calculating the magnetic field from this data, we get different numbers.
Yeah, and of course we should understand that this magnetic field, which is taken from PP dot, it has its own uncertainty.
Yes. We say it with all reserve, but perhaps you are convinced that it looks more promisingly to explain in that case that the evolutionary tracks coincide with the observational data than in that case. So here we have no extreme fine-tuning necessary between 10 to 13 or 10 to 12 Gauss, and also for different initial structures one can reach the heart of this population. And for the standard, for the fast cooling scenario, it looks like that practically all equation of state are more or less compatible, let's say, fit very well into the observational data. The main reason is that we here have really a slower field decay, so that there's more time that the neutron stars can be spun down to the observed.
What critical temperature did you use for supercritical temperature for the
fuel time 10 to 8, no? Or 10 to 9, yeah.
But Tamagaki calculator is less than 10 to 8.
It's
Tamagaki calculated the, using microphysics, the critical supercritical temperature for the composition of direct ulka. And it was less than 10
days.
So I think
here we put a specificity that when you have the direct
ulka. What did you say?
Here we choose a DC like it's almost zero when we have the direct ulka.
Is that always rapid machine emission is allowed from the center of the star? In the case of.
It is in the spirit of what Tamagaki did in the center.
But you said you use superfluid.
Yeah, so
you
it's
need supergroup to import the Cooper pairs. And it has Cooper pairs happens just below the critical temperature. But the critical temperature is less than 10 degrees.
Yeah, but we have mostly superfluid and superconductivity in the outer part of the core.
Oh, I see, the very, very low temperature.
Yeah, and the high density, then it goes to zero.
Yeah, but I think you should still use 10 to 8, I mean, at least less than 10 to 8 instead of 10 to 9 for the critical temperature. The critical temperature 10 to 9 is unrealistic. You have read Tamagaki's paper, didn't you?
If you have
a
direct ulka.
Yeah. So, and 10 to 9 is unrealistic. Mm-hmm. And if you use less than 10 to like 7.5, I'm sure. Well, I don't know. Maybe the results may change. But since these things are happening at low temperature, probably supercooled effect is coming in. The tensor analysis is too high. Okay.
Let me continue. So, also the. Practically all equation of state with fast cooling scenario seems to fit rather well. Unfortunately, fast cooling is more physical for a soft equation of state and for sure incompatible with our stiff equation of state where the temperature TC is high even at the center of the star and there is a strong suppressive effect of the pairing. So, as a consequence, it's not no longer so easy as Urbin and Konenkov did to conclude from the field evolution alone about the internal state of matter of neutron stars. And we had to look around what findings are in favor of what we want to know, what we want to find. We want to find that a not too soft equation of state and the standard cooling scenario applies. First, what we found is the interpretation of kilohertz QPOs as done by Klusniak in 98, who interpreted this 1.15 kilohertz quasi-periodic oscillations as the maximal frequency of the stable Keplerian orbit in general relativity, and once he said the inner radius of the disk equal to the marginal stable radius of the disk, then he came to a mass of the neutron star in this low mass binary in the order of 10 of 2 or a little bit more solar masses, and such a mass cannot be sustained by a too soft equation of state. The other idea came from a paper of Pasha and Sarmiento in 96, who considered the gravitational light bending. The softer the equation of state, the more the light is bended around the neutron star. And in the extreme case, you see always the whole surface of the star, so that you could not observe modulation of the thermal surface emission. However, such modulations are observed, so it is also against the very soft equation of state. And
this may be a too
too strong to claim. Because, yes, I think then you agree that this is true if you neglect its magnetic effects on the angular distribution of radiation, sorry.
Yes. But it's very soft equation is in like 7 kilometers radius.
That's our soft. Yes, and also if you take into account quadrupolar, you can quadrupolar. But it's in that sense, our, at all our arguments, it's a hint. It's not a conclusive. And the last, not least, the comparison of model calculations with the observation of upper limits or what is the effective surface temperature gave not clear evidence for the fast cooling scenario, so that our conclusion with all research is more or less that we believe the crustal field hypothesis is in accordance with the observation if the equation of state is not too soft and the standard cooling scenario or a cooling scenario but is similar to a standard cooling scenario, because we learned that pairing can also bring a fast cooling scenario into a level of a standard cooling scenario, that such and combination gives the best coincidence with observations and our hypothesis. And the other way around, it's also this result is also an argument in favor of the crustal field hypothesis, because we have this compatibility with this PP dot diagram, and we have also other calculations, for example, what we did with the magnetars, what we did with Opin and Konenkov in the accreting systems, which fit practically the same parameters, not the soft equation of state, standard cooling, and this initial parameters, to have a good more or less good agreement between theory and observation. So I ask you kindly to consider also the crustal field hypothesis at the one possibility for neutron stars. Thank you.
I have two comments. The first is, as far as I know, in that group, you did not include what you call flux beaming. That is, beaming because of the effect of O mode and the E mode makes additional beaming. And I don't know if your group, the last paper I read anyway, you didn't include that. If the Shivanov, et cetera, included something. If you include that
strongly
effect,
you're right, strongly increase the pulsation.
Yeah, and so the beaming. So that means the gravitational bending effect for strong soft equation state, that will weaken the pulsation, that's true. But you have to include the flux beaming to compensate, to see whether this statement is correct. I don't know, but because the last paper I read of your group, you did not include that effect, perhaps you should include that. And another comment is about the standard cooling. Well, Dr. Yakov gave me his wonderful review paper, and that gives a scheme to test cooling with Cooper pair. So I applied that last weekend, and looks like standard cooling is in trouble. And I will talk about that next week. Okay. But so, of course, you know, you put in red, clear or something. So, but that statement may change if we have more better observational data and so forth.
What I learned in last time is that in the cooling, everything is possible. This is pairing.
Yeah, but
I said
that's not true. So next week I will hope to spend 30 minutes to tell why I think.
Okay,
so.
Looking
yeah.
forward. Yeah.
Another question.
What are the effects of rotation on this on Europe?
No, they are not taken into account. But one can imagine that there are effects. The first effect would be that the electromagnetic field and the induced electric field becomes some periodic behavior. The next effect is well known for in flat space, you create a strong quadrupolar electric field which puts out the charges, and the so and the boundary condition will not longer apply. So and that brings you already in trouble. And the next effect, of course, you have this tracking of inertial frames that will generate your initial additional electric fields in both outside and inside, but I guess it is a more complicated story. But they are not explicitly not taken into account here.
I'm just wondering if you could, how well would you do if you wanted to take into account the effect of GR in the following way, the cooling curves. You draw a Newtonian cooling curve and then you just stretch the time axis by the gravitational redshift. It would be a good approximation to your GR correction.
Somewhat. Look at the curve, then with GR it looks like the flat one shifted a bit, but not.
Can you remind me, so the proton gap parameter as calculated by someone, I don't really care who, but it has a density dependence.
It means it's a transition temperature.
The transition temperature has a density dependence.
Yes.
Is it unambiguous that Great! So my question is it clear that there's superconducting fluid touching the base of the crust? Could there be a region of the core, which is normal?
I think it's pretty wide. Inside, yeah, but at the crust core boundary, it's definitely superconducting.
So in your mind, there's no doubt about
that? The whole calculation showed that it would go like 2, 3, or 4 times the matter density, and then it vanished. So most of the core is not superconducting.
No, but the outer, but the lower density part of the core
is definitely
is that's the place where you're confident.
Depends on the model. Not everybody becomes
Was that the question you thought I was going to ask?
The TC curve is, of course, not. Nobody agrees.
Okay, one question I'm about to ask. I was wondering about the conductivity in the ohm's law. Is this a scalar conductivity?
Yes.
Is that a potential approximation?
That is the other weak point, and I hope nobody would. If you come to higher field strengths, to higher magnetic fields, this scalar conductivity is not longer the appropriate description, and one has to add to the diffusion equation looks then somewhat different, but it becomes immediately nonlinear. You get a mode coupling. But we are relatively safe up to magnetic field strengths also 10 to 12, 10 to 13, but definitely not for 10 to 14. Then the whole drift term will change the physics completely. And yes, that is the next problem we have to attack, and we are about to do it. And it is very complicated.
But it's not just the whole drift term, it's also the difference between parallel and perpendicular conductivities.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. It changes the situation completely. Yeah. No, that is. But then everything becomes even more nonlinear than it was here. And,
Are the results sensitive to the mass?
We didn't check it. We applied for all models the same.
I would imagine in the redshift factor, that mass gets exponential.
Yeah, it goes into the redshift factor. And
there's some cancellation of factors of R on the bottom. It's MR cubed.
You mean with the moment of inertia and the radius?
Well, the e to the phi, where phi was an effective potential, was occurring in the diffusion equation for the field. So that's somehow related to the to the gravitational
mass.
To something like m squared over R.
Yeah. Well, we didn't check it. We have took the same.
Changing the mass would be much less than changing the equation of state. In an extreme case, it's a soft, very steep. It would be somewhat easy.
Great. Okay, thanks.